What's up, everybody? Welcome to Under the Microscope, Dissecting the Art of Basketball.
So if you guys still aren't fully aware of what we're doing on this podcast, all we're really doing is just talking about specific topics under basketball that have something to do with basketball, literally anything, and just putting them under a microscope and just talking about them as detailed as possible and just giving you guys as much information as we can about each topic. There will be some episodes down the line where we either I or Coleman will talk about a specific subject, just because we've done a lot of research on a specific subject and we just want to make sure that you guys get all there is to know about that. So for today, we're going to go into sand training and the benefits of it and sometimes why it may not be the best option for a lot of different players out there. So Coleman, you can go ahead.
Yeah, so like Yosef said, pretty much today I'm just going to go on a rant about sand training versus on-court training, how it applies, how it doesn't. And I think that's what we're probably going to call these type of episodes down the line. It's just like rant episodes, I guess, rant podcast. Either way, one of us will be giving you pretty much everything you need to know about a subject. It'll still be concise. We're not going to waste your time, I promise. And then Yosef in this case, but when he goes on a rant, I will be doing this. The other person will just be mediating it, making sure we don't go on for hours and hours, asking questions, and just pretty much making sure we don't wrap our eyes off to y'all. But yeah, so today I'm mainly talking about sand training, things that you probably don't know about it, because I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what sand training really does for you. So if you guys don't know, especially in recent years, a lot of it's kind of a trend. So guys working on the beach on sand volleyball courts, it's great. It's great scenery. It's a great way to switch up. But I think there are a lot of very scientific reasons why we should, why we shouldn't. And then you kind of just got to know when it's the time to do it, right? So first, I just want to start by saying I'm not big on doing anything longer than a 10-yard sprint or 10-yard burst on sand. So if you think about a full-speed sprint, the ground contact time of your foot, so the time that it takes for the ball of your foot or wherever your foot strikes the ground to it leaving the ground, it's probably under 160 milliseconds. So that's absolutely no time at all. Is that enough to produce a large amount of force? Probably not with our muscles, right? So we're relying on almost fully elastic qualities during our sprint. So storing that elastic energy that we're getting from our foot hitting the ground and pretty much stretching that rubber band quickly and letting it go. And that's what's kind of propelling us forward and upward, and really makes us fast as athletes. If you try a full-out sprint in the sand, though, I'm not sure exactly how long the contact time will compare, but I guarantee you it's going to be way longer than 0.2 seconds.
Yeah, 100%.
So at this point, you're using a much higher proportion of your muscle, right? Because when you hit the ground and you're on there for 0.3 seconds, let's say, again, I don't know exactly how long. If you're on the ground for 0.3 seconds, it's kind of hard to engage those elastic qualities, those reactive qualities. So you hit the ground, it almost completely kills the stored energy. And then you just have to use your muscles to just propel you off the ground. Right. So we're not relying on the stretch shortening cycle. Will we ever do that in competition when we're sprinting on the court? Hell no. So I think, for example, it's been shown that there's generally an increased plantar flexion in sand sprints. So if you guys don't know what that is, it's if you take your ankle and point it down at the ground, that's what plantar flexion is, right? So if you look at slow motion of a sprinter, their ankle is locked in a pretty dorsiflex position, which is the opposite of plantar flexion if you bring it up to your head. And that's because we're using that stored energy. When you are in that dorsiflex position, your Achilles can absorb that energy and then throw it back out in a way that propels you forward. When you're in sand, it's been shown that there's more plantar flexion, which means less stored energy. And if we're training ourselves in this way, if we're doing full out sprints in the sand, training ourselves to plantar flex, it could be bad, right? Like it could mess up our motor patterns. It could give our brain something to think about that's not the right thing to think about. It could mess with our motor learning, right? So it affects your mechanics even to the point, because if any of you guys have worked out on sand before, you know that shit's hard. and you know 100%. It's gonna, it feels completely different. Like, Joseph, I know we've done sand workouts together. Like, I know neither of our mechanics look the same as if we're on like the court or even on the field.
100% feels different.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think this is the reason why you're gonna be so sore if you do a sand workout, right? Like, if you do a workout on the grass on the court, you're likely not gonna be that sore from an agility workout, for example, if you're adapted to it, because the sand, it takes on those hard surfaces, you're able to use that stored energy. You hit the ground, you just pop back up, because we're not using our muscles as much. Whereas if we're on the sand, it takes away that ability, and we have to recruit more motor units, and that leads to more soreness. So now acceleration is a little bit different, because acceleration relies a little bit more on strength and power output, and the more force we can put in the ground, because our foot is on the ground longer and short. So when you're accelerating, your foot's going to be on the ground longer than when you're sprinting, because I know when you guys are sprinting, you probably feel like you're flying across. Like, it almost feels like you're walking on water. We've talked about this before, Joseph, where it's like, once you get in that top end sprint, you're just like, you're in that groove. You feel relaxed. You feel like you're hardly using any muscle. You're just,
it's like autopilot.
Yeah, you're just an autopilot. And that's what using stored energy feels like. You don't have enough time to use your muscles, really. And in a sense of like, you can't eccentrically contract and then concentrically produce force output in literally less than a snap of a finger. It's impossible. Acceleration is a little bit different, because you're it's just a push. You're pretty much just pumping your legs, your foot's on the ground longer, and you can produce more force, which in turn allows you to accelerate, basically just physics. But basketball is an acceleration game, so I think that we should consider this, because this is what we're really focused on. If you think about it, in basketball, we hardly reach our top end speed. So our main focus in training should probably be acceleration. And then I think sand can be good for this. I think since sand is so different, like I said, we naturally shift our mechanics. And one of these mechanical shifts is that we actually decrease our trunk angle. So we have more of a forward lean, which is great for acceleration. If you talk to anyone, a forward lean, when it's accompanied by forward shin angles, is something that trainers cue all the time. So if we can use sand to naturally cue this, that's a good thing. I would consider sand training to be almost like a pretty specific like power workout in this sense. It's pretty long ground contact times compared to sport. You're still putting force into the ground with intent, but it's not as specific to especially top end speed on the court or on the grass or wherever you're measuring it. So I would almost consider it like a power workout in a sense. And I think one of the biggest, I would say probably the biggest benefit to sand work is conditioning. Because as you know, your RPE, rate of perceived exertion, is off the charts when you're doing sand work. Everything is harder. Making a cut feels like you've never made a cut before. It's completely different. Like,
you feel heavier.
The sand is equivalent to like 40 seconds on the court. But that's for a reason. So like one study, I think they did this with like Australian athletes. They showed that even though you're running at a slower speed, because naturally you can't run as fast in the sand, your heart rate, as well as like I mentioned, your RPE, is higher for the same exercises. If you do a shuttle drill in the sand, if you do a shuttle drill on the court, your heart rate after that drill is going to be higher in the sand. Your RPE, how hard it feels, is going to be higher in the sand. And this is a good thing for us in terms of conditioning. Sand is also an unstable surface. It has much more give. Like when you hit the ground, you don't get that feedback. And that's exactly why we're using more muscle. Like I said, you have to stabilize more. You're using more muscles. And when you use more muscles to stabilize, you need more oxygen to be delivered to those muscles. when you need more oxygen delivered to those muscles, it becomes harder. Your lungs work harder. More lactate builds up. Your substrates are used more. Your glycogen is used more. All that, pretty much, in short, it becomes harder because you have to stabilize every movement and you're depending on muscular force rather than stored energy, stored elastic energy, right? So when we can find a way to make an exercise harder without putting a ton of stress on our joints, because conditioning is a shitload of stress on our joints. 117 is like, think of all the changes of direction, all the acceleration, especially when you're doing it on the court. There's no give on the court. It's just you're pounding your knees into the court every time, it feels like. So if you can find ways to do that with and limit the stress that you put on your joints, it's almost an ideal way. So I think especially off season, when we're not as specific for our, we don't need to be as specific for our conditioning, for our speed work, acceleration work, all that. I think sand is huge because it allows us to really work those tissues, work our ability to get oxygen to those tissues. And that's why I think probably the biggest benefit is conditioning. So in general, I'll give some of like the benefits, give you some of the takeaways. It's good for a change of scenery too. A lot of the time when you're working on the sand, you're also on the beach, which isn't the worst place in the world to work out. Even if you're on like a beach volleyball court, or wherever you can find sand, it's sometimes good to just get away from the court or get away from the field, and just kind of work in a new training environment. Plus, we're lessening the impact on our joints, and we're still getting good high intensity, high velocity, pretty much strength, power work, acceleration work as well. Also, if you're looking to lose weight, I think sand could be a great option for you because losing weight requires a bunch of activity, just like conditioning. That's a lot of stress on our joints. So if you're going for 8 mile runs a day, which I can go on a rant about this, about how you probably shouldn't be doing that. You should be doing high intensity stuff. That's so, like, think about how many times your knee, so much force is just being sent up your kinetic chain every time you take a step. So rather than doing that, if you think about it, when you're on the sand and you can't use pretty much, if you can use a very limited amount of stored elastic energy, you're using almost purely muscular contraction. Muscular contraction requires ATP. It burns calories. Using stored elastic energy, it doesn't. Think about like doing ankle pogos where you're just like quickly bouncing off the ground. Just your ankles, like stored energy, hopping off the ground very quickly. It's going to take you a while to truly get tired doing that, to start breathing hard, for your heart rate to go up. If you're doing squat jumps where you're squatting down, taking a second, jump up, you're purely using muscular contraction. You land, you just keep going. You're going to get tired within the first 20 seconds, easy, because so many muscles are going. That's the same thing for sand. You're not using any stored energy. All your muscles are working to stabilize, to produce that force. And the more muscles you use, like I said, the more oxygen you use, the more calories you burn. I could go on about this for days, but basically the better. Especially when you do high intensity work in the sand, it could be fantastic for weight loss. Change of direction, just learning to absorb force in those higher ground contact times without much stress on the joints, and then kind of progressing to maybe grass and then the court. It's a great progression, and it's a great way to work on stabilizing when you're changing direction. So it could be that's probably a very good benefit in terms of just doing like very short direction or very short distance change of direction work. Also, maybe for rehab, I don't know if there's much research on this, but potentially getting the stimulus of accelerations and speed and getting this high velocity work without the stress on the joints, and kind of allowing you to build up to these shorter contact times, because if you're doing ACL rehab or Achilles rehab, and you go straight to sprinting and doing high velocity stuff on a hard surface, again, you're going to be using those tendons to store that elastic energy, and those tendons probably aren't going to be ready for it, whether you tore them or whether you just have been inactive. They're probably not going to be ready for it. So maybe still getting that stimulus at the beginning stages of movement and rehab as you're kind of progressing to harder surfaces and being able to use those tendons. And then the last thing I'll say is, although there will be carryover to the court here and there, especially acceleration, it's not a sustainable method for short ground, for training short ground contact times, which are primarily what we see in the sport of basketball. Even accelerations are pretty short ground contact times. So maybe work out every 2 weeks, I would say, switch it up, get a good stimulus there. We'll have some good transfer. It'll kind of reap the benefits. But if that's your primary method of agility and acceleration, especially high end speed work, I would say it can probably do more bad than good. But at the end of the day, it's a great stimulus. I can't talk bad on it too much because there are benefits. So feel free to go get some sand work. I love getting sand work in. It just feels different. It's fun. Makes for a cool little video. But at the end of the day, don't make it your primary method. It's probably the take from this.
So I have a few questions
about it.
Okay. I have a few questions. So for people that do have access to like sand and like sand pits or beaches or whatever, how often would you recommend on to an average athlete, somebody with like few years of experience in the weight room, they're not like newbies to the gym or anything, so like it's not something that they would have to be concerned for in terms of having the strength foundation or whatever. How often would you recommend guys to get on the sand and hit some agility work and conditioning work if possible?
Actually, once you have some years and you're kind of accustomed to the shorter ground contact times, I wouldn't use it too much. I would say you can definitely use it a little bit more at first because it's a new stimulus. So you're gonna feel sore when you wake up that first day. But once you kind of stop getting sore and adapting to it, that's what we don't want to adapt to new mechanics that the same forcing us into.
So are there any mechanics? Because I heard you were mentioning how it's good for building strength. So like if you were to run sand dunes, would you think that's beneficial in carrying over to basketball training?
I think I've seen a study where it shows that, I'm not sure about sand dunes, but I know about flat sand surfaces, that there is a carryover. So they saw an improvement that was equal to that of a training program on grass to like hard surfaces. So there's definitely a carryover, but I think it comes down to not overdoing that carryover. So kind of accepting where we can get those gains and not continuing to just go at it with the sand doing sand. And kind of accepting like, okay, look, this is what we're going to get from the sand. Once we kind of go past this point, it may be kind of detrimental to us. So I would say at first, you can, if you want to do it weekly, go ahead, especially kind of in the off season when you don't need to be at your peak point. You know what I'm saying? Like if you want to try new things, you know, to hell with it. Like I wouldn't be mad at you. But once you really need to start nailing those mechanics down for the season, maybe every couple of weeks, if you want to get that stimulus, if you want to switch things up. And it really just depends on who you are as an athlete. So if you're a very reactive athlete, I probably wouldn't prescribe you sand work because I don't want to take that away from you. I don't want you to adapt to not using that stored energy, because that's what makes you such an elite athlete. and taking that away from you is just selling you short. So it does kind of depend on an analysis of the athlete and your situation, time of year, all that. But I think doing sand work every couple of weeks, you know, once a month isn't going to hurt you. It's going to do more good than bad if you spread it out like that.
I also have, I think, about two more questions.
Yeah.
For the next one. So how do you, this could probably be something that we ourselves experiment when you get back to Miami, but how do you think it would work if you combined like sand training with like flat ground training? So like if you had like a superset, you said what?
So yeah, so like kind of a contrast training.
Yeah, like a superset with like you do some like agility work in on the sand, and then you do that same drill except on a flat surface. Would you think it would like make you more explosive on that flat surface, or do you think it would pull away? Because I know long term wise, if you solely focused on sand, it would take away that reactive element. But if you added that, like if you just contrasted it with the flat ground surface,
right,
do you think it would have more of a beneficial?
That's an interesting question. I haven't seen any research on it, but so I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. But my thoughts on this would be, it would kind of allow us to train at a higher frequency with sand, because we're getting those benefits. And then, well, actually it could go one of two ways. So as anything, it kind of depends, but one way it could go is you're getting the benefits from the sand work. So you're cueing that forward lean, you're cueing those stabilizer muscles, those, the ability,
absorption.
The ability to really produce force. And then you're stepping onto a hard surface and you're applying everything in it, and it comes together and it produces a good output. On the other hand, you could be training on the sand and you could be training for co-contraction and the, all those stable. So pretty much co-contraction is, if you think about, if you're squeezing your glute to contract, but your hip flexors are also turned on, there's going to be no net force production.
It's like they offset each other.
They offset each other. So if we're training on sand and all these stabilizer muscles are firing and every side of the joint is firing because we're not trying to fall over, because it's an unstable surface, then we could step on to the hard surface or to the grass and continue to kind of feel that, and our mind could kind of learn that on the sand and then apply it to the hard surface. And that would take away from our force production, our ultimately our speed, our acceleration. So that would be interesting. It would be interesting to do a study on that.
We should try out.
I'm down. Yeah, I'll be down to just like even unofficially mark our times
before,
after.
Because thinking is that it's like it's kind of like synonymous to like wearing. Obviously, there's a lot of different differences, but it's kind of like synonymous to wearing like a weighted vest or something and sprinting with it. And then when you take it off, you just feel lighter.
Yeah, so it's like it's post-activation potentiation. Yeah, so it's PAP, which is post-activation potentiation, which is like I used to play baseball when I was a little ass kid, and we would put like a little weight on the end of the baseball bat before we were warming up, and we would swing the shit out of it, and then once you go up to bat, that bat feels like it's 1 pound. And it's like the same thing for like a weighted ball, where you get a weighted ball, next thing you know, you get the normal size basketball in your hands and it feels light as hell. So it could definitely apply some PAP benefits. Just like strength work. If you're deadlifting, you wait some minutes, then you do a vertical jump. Same idea.
Exactly.
So I'd definitely be down to do that. That kind of informal study.
And then my last question is, for the people that don't have access to sand and don't have access to beaches and stuff of that nature, are there any alternatives that can provide the same benefits, such as like swimming pools or like slide? I don't know, what are those little like platforms called where you can like slide side to side on them, or like you put something on your feet? Yeah, I guess that's a pretty reasonable name. But for do you think those are good alternatives for sand, or maybe better, or what do you think about those?
I think a swimming pool is kind of similar in the sense that you're getting work in without the stress on your body, without the stress on your joints. So obviously the two are different in the fact that you're not actually applying force into the ground. But if you want to do some open chain movements,
go ahead. I was about to say, before you continue, can you elaborate what open chain means to everybody?
Yeah. So closed chain is basically you're applying force into something. I'm trying to explain this in like the easiest way possible. So like a squat, like a or a deadlift, where you're literally applying force into the ground, or even like a leg press where you're pushing on something. Whereas open chain is like a, let's say like a lateral raise for like your shoulders, where you're, it's the end of the resistance is not like the ground. I'll just put it that way for now. It's probably not the best explanation for it, but I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. So everything in the pool, like you can be doing jumping movements for sure. But the force isn't going to be the same. So that's going to be a little bit different, but open chain movements in terms of like working your internal and external hip rotation, stuff like that will be, that's definitely good for the pool, because it pretty much is applying resistance in all directions. And so the pool is definitely kind of similar in the sense that it's going to give you a very good stimulus without putting too much stress on the joints. And then slide boards are very good for just applying maximal force, or close to it at least, and like a in a high velocity and in a lateral direction without, and I mean, yeah, so and it, like I guess you could say that's kind of the replacement for like a skater jump,
whereas
you have to actually land and absorb that force. Yeah. And once you're doing a lot of reps of those, it could definitely add up. Whereas for slide boards, you're not landing. You're just hitting the other end of the board, which doesn't apply stress on the joint. So, yeah, stuff like that. Being creative ways to – or finding creative ways to be explosive without stressing your joints out too much. Because especially as basketball players, we're always on the court. 90% of players have had jumpers in their life. At the end of the day, it's likely going to happen to the best of us, unless we really focus on our tendon health.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a good point that you made in terms of just finding other alternatives like that to kind of unload your joints.
Yeah.
Get that high force, high velocity work in, if you don't want to get sand workouts in too much, which I would advise not to.
Yeah, and it seems like the main benefit that the sand provides is that RPE you're talking about, like the rated perceived exertion. So, would you say that's like the main? It's like it, taking into consideration all of the, like the absorption, the like loop being loose on the joints, being nice on the joints, all those extra things. Do you think the main takeaway for, or the main benefit, is just the conditioning aspect of sand workouts? Because a lot of guys do it in the season.
Right. Yeah. So I think it comes down to just the fact that it's unstable. So if you want some kind of stability work, that'd be good. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that it's unstable kind of opens the door for that higher RPE, like you said. So it's going to be harder for conditioning. It's going to be you're going to burn more calories inherently because you're recruiting more muscles for weight loss
to push up.
So I think I would say that is, if I had to choose, the number one benefit of sand work, just the fact that you're using more muscles, and thus it just makes everything harder. You're using more oxygen.
And lastly, this is something I'm not sure if exists in like the training world yet, but I feel like I just got the idea just from hearing you talk about the pool. But what do you think about like a 1 foot deep pool to work on like agility work? That obviously you have to have grip on your feet, make sure you don't slip and slide in there. But do you think the benefits of that, how, because I've seen people like jump out of pools, I've seen people like, we ourselves, we've done like the single leg jumps in the pool, but when if it's just like below the knee, like if you're only like ankle deep in the water, do you think there could be some type of benefit or some type of like way you could gain anything from that at all?
I think that's a very interesting question. I've always thought about like the little kiddie pools, like that are just like 1 or 2 feet deep. And I've kind of wondered if there's any benefit in those. But I think the main thing that I could see happening in this is kind of almost like an assisted pogo. So like, it's just like using bands for mm-hmm. overspeed and like and more of like a vertical jump sense. So like
mm-hmm.
overspeed training, I could go on for a while about this, but it's basically helping your body move faster. Mm-hmm. Or giving your body less force to work with so you can move faster.
I see.
And I think for like the pools, if you jump in a pool, you're not going to fall to the bottom as quickly as you would if you just drop in the air and let gravity work
on itself. And at the same time, it's a lot harder to jump in a pool or like jump as high as you can in a pool.
Because there's
like
resistance everywhere.
It's like the harder you push in any direction, the harder it is to move in that direction.
Right, exactly.
Which is like the opposite of water or opposite of outside of water.
Yeah, literally. So I think the thing, so if you're doing like pogo jumps in here, which is just ankle work where like you're just bouncing up and down your ankle. Mm-hmm. I think the thing here is you would bounce up, you would be a little bit slower coming down. So you would have less force to have to redirect back upwards. So you have less force to absorb. So that could potentially be good for rehab settings, I guess. If your Achilles isn't really ready for pogo jumps on the ground, but you're in water, you're not going to be absorbing as much force.
Yeah.
Having to use that stored energy to bounce back up quick.
Yeah.
So potentially rehab, maybe progressing like plyometrics. It would be good to
kind of like the banded jumps that also.
Or it would be good to have yourself moving faster than you normally do. And that's kind of a neuromuscular thing where you're teaching your body to move faster because you have less force to absorb, I guess. But that would be probably for the beginning stages of, I don't really see much of a use for advanced athletes in terms of like the way that I'm saying, but
yeah,
that'd probably be for advanced or guys going through rehab or
sure.
That's a good ass question though. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I got really interested when you were talking about the pool. I was thinking like, wow, that would be a pretty interesting training tool to have.
Yeah,
it's like a little, because like they got everything now with like underwater treadmills, like those mm-hmm. zero gravity treadmills where you put like your leg in some type of like fucking astronaut fucking
thing.
So it's just really interesting to see like different ways to use the tools that are available to us, you know.
Yeah, and you notice a lot of the guys using those are guys who are rehabbing. So I think
a
shallow pool would come in kind of in the same place and like a rehab, maybe Achilles, maybe like a foot injury. Some just kind of that use right there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You got anything else?
That's pretty much it. I always thought like the when you're talking about the plantar flexion part, I always thought that was good, that you were like pushing mm-hmm. that full range of motion. But now that I think about it, it's probably best to have that reactivity in your ankles just to be like as bouncy and pogo as possible. Definitely something I learned from today.
Possible.
Yeah. Cool. That's interesting. I like that. Because me being like the workaholic I am, is I always thought whatever is harder is
harder,
probably better.
Better. Yeah.
So I always thought like so to learn that actually isn't like as much better as I thought it was is like is wonderful to hear. Because you know like
when it's like wow, I can be easier and I can still
but perfect. That's interesting. I like that
for sure. So I think that's pretty comprehensive. I hope you guys have a good grasp of the benefits, the cons of sand training, and kind of a good image of where it can fit in your training, depending on who you are as an athlete. So hopefully we answered that today. Next time, Yosef will probably be ranting on the next rant podcast. Mm-hmm. We're not sure what that's going to be about yet, but I'm sure it'll be interesting because going to be going off talking his ass off for 20 to 30 minutes about something interesting. So excited for that.
And for everything that we talk about, don't try to be as skeptical as possible. So yes. What I mean by that is go out there yourself and experiment it with yourself. Don't just take what we hear or what you hear as law. So if there's something that you always like, what Coleman just mentioned about the plantar flexion, that's something that I'm probably going to like go out there myself, go on the beach myself once this whole corona thing is over, and just like play with it and see if that actually does make the sense the way that he just explained it to. Obviously, I think it does make a lot of sense, but I want to see it and play
always
it
test a lot it
more than just like, exactly. So when it comes to everything we talk about, like everything in theory is different from practice. Like you would want it to be perfectly synonymous with how it is in theory, but sometimes things are just, especially if you're a different type of athlete, like say you're like, you're heavier than most or you're lighter than most, maybe it has a different benefit for you. It's because the studies aren't done for every single type of person out there in the entire world. So it's just, you're always a unique case. So try to play with it yourself and just learn from as much as you can from what we have to tell you guys.
Hell yeah. And if you have any questions, so if you're wondering anything at all about this podcast or about basketball in general, let us know and we'll answer it in the DMs or wherever. Or we can just answer it on another podcast, which we're always looking
for. If you guys have any topics that you want to hear about on the podcast, let us know. We're open to any suggestions.
So thank you guys for tuning in. If you made it this far, you made it through a pretty long and scientific rant, and I applaud you for that. And thank you guys for trusting us with your ears and with your learning. And thank you for helping us get this podcast off the ground, because we're definitely going places in the future. So we'd like to.
Yeah, definitely.
The guys that are around from the start always kind of make themselves known, and that's good because they're day one. So I appreciate that. So if you guys are listening to it down the road too, it's never too late to be a big time supporter. So let us know how we can help you guys in that sense too. But thank everyone who's tuning into it.
Yeah, 100%. We appreciate all y'all. We wouldn't be anything without you guys.
For sure. So thank you guys. Suggestions are always welcome. Stay safe, everybody.
All right, stay safe.